Imagine pouring like $50,000 into a state-of-the-art marketing campaign.
Oh, a massive investment.
Right. And your dashboard, it just lights up like a pinball machine. I mean, you're looking at 10,000 new leads.
It feels like a massive win in the moment.
Exactly. So you hand this massive list over to your sales team. High fives all around, right? And then at the end of the quarter, they close exactly zero deals. Nothing.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Why does this happen like every single day in B2B marketing?
Well, it's because we've been totally conditioned to treat lead generation like this simple math problem. You know, more inputs equal more output.
That's putting more fuel in the engine.
Exactly. Put more fuel in, the car goes faster, but we completely ignore the chemical composition of the fuel itself.
And that is exactly our mission for today's deep dive. So
Yeah.
we are welcoming you, whether you're, a founder trying to scale a lean startup or a revenue leader managing this massive enterprise sales floor. We want to help you figure out how to cut through the absolute noise of vanity metrics.
Because there is so much noise out there.
So much. And we're pulling our insights today from a really, truly eye-opening guide by marketing director Lauren Popeck. It was published in March 2026, and it's titled B2B Lead Generation Companies: How to Choose the Right Service.
It's a fantastic piece of research.
It really is. And the goal here is to basically decode the difference between those opportunistic, spray and pray tactics and the highly structured systems that actually drive real business growth.
Right. And the stakes here for you, the listener, they just couldn't be higher. Wasting time on low intent leads, it isn't just some administrative annoyance.
No, it's a massive drain on
But
resources.
it's huge, and it's often invisible. I mean, it burns your marketing budget, it absolutely destroys sales team morale, and as we'll see later, it can literally damage your company's technical infrastructure.
Yeah, we definitely need to get into that technical damage later.
Yeah.
But to understand how to build a high-performing lead engine, we first have to look at why that $50,000 hypothetical campaign we talked about just failed so spectacularly.
It really comes down to a fundamental misunderstanding of what a lead actually is.
Right. It's this trap of prioritizing activity over alignment. Companies buy these massive outdated contact lists, they blast out generic templates, and they build incentive structures that actually reward their marketing teams for sheer volume.
Which is totally counterproductive.
It is. It's like feeding your sales team an exclusive diet of cotton candy.
Oh, I love that. That is the perfect way to visualize it. Just 10,000 calories of pure sugar.
Right. I mean, it looks incredible on a plate. The volume is undeniably there, but there is absolutely zero nutritional value.
None at all.
And if we look at the mechanics of how that stalls a pipeline, a sales rep gets a quote-unquote lead. They spend 30 minutes researching the company. They spend another 15 customizing a pitch.
Making the follow-up calls.
Right, making like three follow-up calls over 2 weeks. And then they finally get the person on the phone, only to realize it's like a junior intern who downloaded a white paper for a college project.
Yeah, that is an hour of highly paid sales time completely stolen from a legitimate buyer.
Exactly. So how do the high-performing providers avoid this junk food trap?
Well, they construct their services with an entirely different architecture. They basically build this three-layered filtration system. So if you want that actual nutritional value, you need these three distinct layers operating mechanically in the background.
Okay, let's break down how those layers actually function in the real world.
So the first layer is audience definition. But we have to move way past basic demographics, like, we sell to IT directors in healthcare.
Right, that's way too broad.
Way too broad. We are talking about strict firmographic and behavioral signals. So firmographic means we're filtering by the company's actual technical reality, like do they use a specific legacy database system?
Or they meet a certain revenue threshold.
Exactly. And then behavioral means we're tracking what they are actively doing right now. Are they searching for API integration solutions this week?
So you aren't just looking for a specific title. You're looking for a specific title at a company that is currently experiencing the exact technical pain your product solves.
Precisely. And that leads directly to the second layer, which is channel orchestration. This is the actual mechanism of reaching them.
The outreach part.
Right. Think of it like a combined arms military strategy. You don't just send infantry, right? You coordinate air, armor, and artillery.
So in B2B terms, you are coordinating outbound email, content syndication, social touch points.
Yes, orchestrating them so they hit the prospect in a specific logical sequence.
Which brings us to the third layer, which is like the ultimate bouncer at the door, the qualification framework.
Yeah, and this is the most critical mechanical step. The qualification framework is the automated logic that scores the lead before a human being ever even sees it.
How does that look in practice?
So if a prospect engages with a campaign, the system cross-references their IP address against your target account list, checks their job title, and assigns a point value. And if they don't hit the threshold,
they're automatically stripped out. They never even reach the sales floor.
Exactly. But the terrifying part of this architecture is the interdependency. Weakness in any single layer introduces compounding inefficiencies downstream.
Because if your firmographic data is slightly off, your channel orchestration starts bombarding the wrong companies.
Right. And suddenly your qualification framework is just completely overwhelmed trying to filter out this tidal wave of false positives. It creates a massive domino effect of wasted capital.
Wow. So if the architecture is that delicate, let's look at the actual channels being used to deliver the message. Because Lauren Popek's guide gets into this. And even if you perfectly define your audience, the mechanism you use to reach them can secretly fail.
Oh, absolutely.
Let's talk about email deliverability.
Yeah.
The guide brings up this fascinating concept of silent performance loss. B2B email isn't just bulk distribution anymore.
No, but so many organizations still treat it that way. This is where the technical reality of the internet just collides with marketing strategy. They buy a list of 50,000 people, load it into HubSpot or Pardot, and just hit send.
And they assume that if they don't get a bounce back notification, the email landed safely in the inbox.
Which is a catastrophic assumption. Silent performance loss happens when your domain reputation is damaged. Email servers like Google and Microsoft, they constantly talk to each other.
Oh, right. They're monitoring behavior.
Exactly. They monitor how recipients interact with your messages. If you suddenly spike your sending volume by blasting 10,000 emails and nobody opens them, or worse, a few people mark them as spam, those servers take notice.
They quietly categorize your entire domain as junk.
Yes. You are effectively shadow banned. Your marketing dashboard looks fantastic, right? It proudly says 10,000 emails delivered.
But in reality, those messages were quietly routed straight to a quarantine folder or some hidden spam tab.
Exactly. You aren't being ignored by the decision maker because your subject line was weak. You are being ignored because you are invisible. You are basically standing behind soundproof glass, screaming at a crowd.
That completely reframes the goal. You can't outmarket a bad domain reputation. You have to actively manage your sending infrastructure, you know, send in small segmented batches.
Right. It's highly technical.
But let's say you do everything right technically. You bypass the spam filters, you land in the primary inbox of a CIO.
Yep.
Now you face the personalization trap.
Yes, the instinct here is to completely over-engineer the message.
Right.
Marketers will scrape social media to find out where the prospect went to college or what sports team they follow, and they stuff it right into the opening line of the email.
Like, hey, Dave, saw the Bulldogs won this weekend. Anyway, want to buy some enterprise software?
Exactly. It's exhaustive personalization, and it creates massive operational bottlenecks because you just can't scale that level of manual research.
And it feels kind of creepy.
It does. The modern buyer sees right through it. It feels invasive and completely disconnected from actual business value.
So the shift the source talks about is moving towards selective personalization.
Right.
Focusing only on variables that actually impact response rates.
Right, like industry pain points or trigger events. Let's map out how that works mechanically.
Okay, so instead of talking about football, your automated system flags that the prospect's company just acquired a smaller competitor.
Yeah.
That is a trigger event.
Yeah.
So the selective personalization becomes something like, I saw your recent acquisition of company X. Usually when that happens, IT directors struggle for months trying to securely integrate two completely different legacy databases.
Boom. You are demonstrating deep contextual awareness without having to manually research their weekend hobbies.
Right. And it scales beautifully. It immediately establishes you as an expert. But I mean, if outbound email requires this incredibly delicate balance, a lot of companies might just pivot heavily into inbound marketing instead.
Let the leads come to us.
Right. Exactly. Which brings us to content syndication. But that introduces a completely different yet equally dangerous trap.
Oh, it really does.
First, let's clearly define what content syndication actually is for the listener. We aren't just talking about publishing a blog post on your own website and hoping Google finds it.
No, content syndication is an active, paid strategy. You take your highest value assets like white papers, research reports, webinars, and you partner with third-party industry networks or specialized publishers to host your content.
So you're placing your material exactly where active researchers are already going to educate themselves.
Exactly. They fill out a form with their contact details on that third-party site to download your report, and boom, you get the lead data.
It sounds brilliant. But here is the massive aha moment from the guide. The depth of your content serves as a direct mechanical qualification filter.
Yes, and this is so counterintuitive for marketing teams whose bonuses are tied to download volume.
Right. If you write a surface-level listicle titled Five Broad Trends in HR Technology, you are casting a massive net. You will get thousands of downloads.
But who is actually downloading that?
Exactly. A college student writing a term paper? A junior analyst doing broad industry research? A competitor.
More cotton candy.
Endless cotton candy. The intent to actually purchase enterprise software is near zero. But if you massively increase the technical depth of the content, you naturally repel the tourists.
What does that look like in practice, though?
The guide mentions very specific formats. We're talking about publishing a 20-page, highly technical comparative analysis of data integration API structures, or a detailed implementation framework.
Think about the psychological reality of that asset. A casual browser is not going to trade their professional contact information to read 20 pages on API structures.
No way.
The only human being on earth who downloads that document is someone who is actively, acutely experiencing the pain of broken data integration. The depth of the material does the filtering for you.
It's brilliant. You actively want fewer downloads because the friction guarantees the quality. But this raises a massive strategic question.
Okay.
We've looked at the highly targeted nature of outbound email. We've looked at the deep, intent-capturing nature of inbound content syndication. What happens to the message itself when we try to run both of these things simultaneously?
Well, this requires us to look at how we frame language itself.
Right.
The words you choose dictate the entire quality of the response. And there is a hard line between feature-focused messaging and outcome-focused messaging.
Let's elevate this beyond just basic copywriting advice. How does this tie back into the firmographic data we gathered in layer one?
So feature-focused messaging is essentially a product catalog. It tells the prospect what the tool does. Our platform features real-time bi-directional API syncing.
Sounds very technical.
It does. And if you blast that out, you might attract curiosity. A tech enthusiast might click out of sheer interest. But curiosity doesn't carry a budget.
Right.
Outcome-focused messaging takes that same firmographic data, say, we know they manage a decentralized remote team, and translates the feature into a business reality.
So instead of bi-directional API syncing, you say, we eliminate the 15 hours your engineering team wastes every week manually reconciling data.
Exactly. You are attaching the message to a measurable financial outcome. Outcome-focused messaging attracts relevance, and relevance is what drives a purchasing decision.
Okay, wait, I have to jump in and push back on this architecture a bit.
Sure.
We are talking about building outcome-focused messaging, managing technical email deliverability, publishing 20-page technical white papers on third-party networks. I mean, if I'm running a lean operation, trying to orchestrate outbound email and inbound syndication simultaneously sounds like an absolute administrative nightmare.
There's a lot to manage.
Doesn't trying to run a hybrid model just fragment your budget and create massive operational noise?
That is the exact trap that breaks most mid-market companies. If you just slap these channels together without a unified architecture, you are absolutely right. It fragments your budget, it confuses the market, and you burn your team out.
So why do it?
Because the source material shows that hybrid models consistently outperform single-channel strategies if and only if they are perfectly aligned.
Okay, so how does that alignment actually function to prevent the fragmentation?
Because a perfectly aligned hybrid model captures the complete 360-degree ecosystem of buyer behavior. Email initiates direct outbound pressure. Syndication captures self-directed inbound research, but they must share the exact same targeting criteria and the exact same messaging themes.
Meaning I can't be pitching cost reduction in my outbound emails while my syndication white papers are entirely focused on employee retention.
Precisely. If they are disconnected, it's just noise. But when they are aligned, they create a surround sound effect. Here is the mechanical journey. A prospect sees your deep dive white paper on a specialized publisher site. They don't download it today because they are busy. But a week later, they receive a highly targeted email from your sales team addressing that exact same operational pain point.
The channels validate each other.
Yes. The outbound email triggers the memory of the inbound asset.
But even with that surround sound effect, if someone does download the white paper from the syndication network, you still can't just blindly hand them to sales, right? you still need validation layers to weed out the false positives.
Absolutely. Content syndication operates on opt-in engagement. But engagement is not the same thing as intent.
What's a false positive in this context?
A false positive is a contact who genuinely needed to read your technical framework to solve a problem themselves, but they have absolutely zero budget or authority to buy your software to do it for them.
So how do you mechanically filter them out post-engagement?
You introduce validation logic. When the lead data comes in from the publisher, it hits your marketing automation platform. Before a sales rep is ever notified, the system fires off an automated, outcome-focused follow-up email asking a single specific qualification question.
Or tracking behavior.
Right. The system tracks their behavioral scoring. Did they just open the document and close it? Or did they spend 20 minutes scrolling through the pricing tier page on your website afterward? You validate the intent algorithmically.
Which brings us to the most dangerous part of this entire deep dive. You can have the perfect hybrid strategy. You can have brilliant messaging. You can have a flawless combined arms orchestration. And there are still foundational constraints that can secretly tank the entire operation overnight.
The hidden saboteurs. And the most destructive one by far is data quality.
Data is not static, it rots.
Yeah.
People change jobs, companies merge, email routing protocols get updated. If you are feeding your highly sophisticated lead generation engine with a purchase database from 2 years ago, 30% of it is already dead.
At least 30%.
Right. And poor data introduces compounding inefficiencies that no amount of clever copywriting can fix.
It is the ultimate garbage in, garbage out scenario, but playing out on a multi-million dollar scale.
So why do incredibly smart revenue leaders let this happen? How do they not see the rot in the system?
Well, it's because they are looking at the wrong dashboard. They misjudge their performance by relying entirely on early stage top of funnel metrics. They look at open rates. They look at the sheer volume of content downloads.
And they report to the board, the campaign is a massive success.
Exactly. They are weighing the cotton candy. They are measuring weight, not density.
So what should they be doing?
To spot the hidden saboteurs, you have to completely ignore those early signals and ruthlessly evaluate downstream outcomes.
Give us the specific downstream metrics we should be looking at.
The first is the conversion rate from a raw lead to a qualified pipeline opportunity. Not just a meeting booked, but a meeting that actually results in a verified opportunity.
Okay, and the second?
Second, and arguably most important, is the sales acceptance rate, or SAR. Of all the leads marketing generates, what percentage does the sales team actually accept and agree are worth their time?
Wow, yeah.
If your SAR is under 10%, your data quality or your qualification framework is broken, period.
That is a harsh but really necessary reality check. But data decay isn't the only operational risk we need to navigate. The text points to specific, often overlooked saboteurs. One that really caught my attention is audience saturation.
Oh, this is a big one. This is what happens when your targeting is actually too narrow and your data doesn't refresh.
Right. You build this perfect list of 5,000 highly qualified decision makers, and then you just hammer them. You send them outbound emails every week. You retarget them with ads, you call them.
And eventually, they don't just ignore you. They actively block your domain. You burn the list to the ground.
You extract all the value without letting the ecosystem replenish. And that ties into an even higher impact risk mentioned in the text, compliance failures.
Yeah, this isn't just about being polite. This is a strict legal reality.
Right. If your data isn't clean, if you are ignoring opt-out requests because your systems aren't syncing properly, or if you're violating international data privacy regulations, you aren't just wasting marketing budget. You are actively exposing the entire business to catastrophic fines and reputational destruction.
When you connect all of these operational risks, you know, the data decay, the audience saturation, the compliance exposure, it paints a very clear picture of how lead generation must evolve alongside a business.
How does that evolution map out as a company scales?
Well, in the early stages of a startup, lead generation is almost always opportunistic. It's highly experimental. You try a webinar, you buy a small list, you see what sticks.
Just hacking growth.
Exactly. But as the company scales, growth introduces massive unforgiving complexity. You have expanded audiences, aggressive competitors, and a vital need for predictable revenue.
So the opportunistic stuff stops working.
Completely. You can no longer rely on experimental tactics. You have to evolve into mature, predictable systems with controlled inputs, strict algorithmic qualification, and measurable downstream outputs.
So What does this all mean for you, the listener, as you look at your own pipeline today? Let's synthesize the ultimate takeaway here. Effective B2B lead generation is fundamentally not about casting the widest net. It is not an exercise in volume.
No, not at all.
It is about the rigorous engineering of alignment. It's about combining targeted firmographic precision with outcome-focused messaging, entirely supported by clean, continuously refreshed data.
Right.
It is about building an automated filtration system that removes the noise before it ever drains your sales floor.
It is the deliberate choice to trade the illusion of activity for the reality of alignment. But as we wrap up, this evolution toward perfectly engineered systems raises a rather provocative question for you to mull over.
Oh, let's hear it.
We are looking at a future where B2B lead generation is becoming a perfectly structured science. As every single competitor in your specific market abandons generic templates, as everyone adopts perfectly optimized, outcome-focused hybrid models,
right,
and as everyone uses behavioral signals to send the exact right message at the exact right time, how will you ensure your outreach doesn't just become background noise? I mean, when perfection, hyper-relevance, and clean data become the absolute baseline for everyone, what will be the new, uniquely human differentiator that makes a decision maker finally decide to hit reply to you?
Wow. That is the ultimate paradox of optimization. When everyone is perfect, perfection is no longer an advantage.
Exactly.
That is a brilliant puzzle to leave off on. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Take these frameworks, audit your downstream metrics, and please stop feeding your sales team cotton candy.
Please.
Apply these mechanical insights to your next big campaign, and we'll see you next time.